Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It was my third week in the Philippines.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And I was headed to a small coastal town that wasn't even on most tourists' maps. The plan was to get there before sundown, settle into a hostel, and maybe catch a sunset by the beach. I waited by the roadside with a few locals for the next minibus heading that way. When one finally pulled up, the driver barked something in Tagalog, motioned me forward, and shoved my backpack in the back. There were clearly empty seats in the back, but they threw a rice sack on one of them and told me, in broken English, that it was full. The driver patted the front seat and smiled. "You sit here. Safe." I hesitated. My gut didn't like it. But 3 hours didn't seem too bad. His friend, stocky and wearing mirrored sunglasses, hopped in beside me. As the engine sputtered to life, he smiled like we were on a first date. "Where are you from? America?" "Yes, Chicago," I replied politely, shifting closer to the window. He whistled. "Exotic. Beautiful eyes." I gave a tight smile and turned toward the passing trees. At every stop, he brought me snacks. Banana fritters, soda, some sticky rice wrapped in leaves. I declined most, but he kept insisting. "You my guest," he grinned. He showed me pictures of his kids, his wife, his house. They were sweet looking. I nodded, smiled, said things like, "Cute kids." He beamed. "You should meet them. We cook lechon. You like lechon?" "I'm vegan." "You need meat. Give you strength." 30 minutes from the town, things changed. He opened his photo gallery again, but this time it was gym selfies. Shirtless. Sweaty. "Soon six-pack. You assess my body, yes?" I didn't respond. I crossed my arms and looked out the window. And that's when I felt it. His hand on my knee.
"Don't worry," he said softly. "My wife not home."
I shoved his hand off and snapped, "Don't you dare touch me!" Silence. The driver looked over.
Whoa. He just play. No angry.
"Pull over. I'm getting out."
"Relax," the driver said. "We take you to your hostel. VIP service."
His friend chuckled.
"You got boyfriend? Why single? So beautiful. Come, we get drunk. Swim in pool. Three of us."
I turned back and yelled, "Stop the bus! I said pull over!" There were two other passengers in the bus. One was fast asleep without a care in the world. The other was watching everything intently. He was expressionless with mouth wide open. My heart was pounding. I scanned the road outside. Trees, dust, no shops, no people, no way to run. I had two options: jump off a moving bus in the middle of nowhere, or play along, just long enough. I swallowed my fear.
"Okay," I said, trying to keep my voice even. "Pool sounds fun. I'm just tired, that's all."
The two of them exchanged a grin like they'd already won. By the time we reached what looked like a dingy roadside resort, it was evening. A murky pool shimmered under flickering yellow bulbs. I followed them, clutching my bag, fingers trembling as I discreetly opened WhatsApp and messaged, "Need help. These men. Resort 30 minutes from San Luis. Pin location." I hit send. To Arjun, the Indian guy I'd met at a hostel in Palawan. The only one I trusted in this entire country.
Inside the pool area, they poured cheap rum into plastic cups.
Time for swim. You wear this, no?
He tossed me a faded hotel towel. I shook my head.
I'll just dip my legs.
They didn't care. The one with mirrored sunglasses, Rico, I think, slid in beside me.
Sunburn bad here. You exotic girl. Must put sunscreen.
I blinked.
Okay, but only one of you gets to do it. And I'll do whatever he says after that.
Deal? That was all it took. They froze, turned to each other, puffed up with ego and liquor.
I brought her snacks. I made her laugh. You always get the girls. This one's mine.
I scooted away quietly as they began shouting. One of them actually shoved the other. Glass shattered. Suddenly, red and blue lights. Police. Two officers stormed in with flashlights. The two men looked like stunned goats. One officer glanced at me. You okay, ma'am? I nodded, swallowing down tears.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
They took statements, but I barely remember it. I only remember packing my bag with shaky hands, climbing into a tuk-tuk the police called for me, and heading straight back to my old hostel. I didn't wait to find out what happened to Rico or the driver. Didn't care. This story is inspired from a real event shared by one of our Broccoli Fam subscribers. In real life, she screamed at them in the bus and they finally stopped it. She immediately got off, and thankfully it was a busy street. She was safe after that. I never expected dorm life to feel like a slow burn horror show. When I moved into Westbridge Hall, 10th floor, room 1007, it was late August. Muggy and heavy, a kind of heat that clings to your skin like a warning. My roommate, Danielle, was already there when I arrived, arranging her side of the room with military precision. Posters lined perfectly, desk supplies in neat rows, bed tucked in tight.
Hey, I'm Maddie,
I said, smiling, dragging my duffel in. Danielle turned, wide-eyed, like she hadn't expected me.
Hi, Danielle.
We tried small talk, but she was distracted. By the second day, I noticed her routines. Every night before bed, Danielle would lock the door, turn the handle right, pull three times, left, pull three times, right again, pull three more times. It was hypnotic. Do you have, like, a code or something? I joked. My mom says it's the only way to make sure the door is secure. I laughed, but she didn't. Her mother. That woman ruled our room, even though she wasn't physically present. When we tried arranging our beds into an L shape to maximize space, Danielle came back from a weekend at home saying, "My mom says no. Someone could fall out the window." I stared at the window. Bolted, locked, 2 feet above bed level. "You think someone's gonna roll over, launch themselves up and out like a gymnast?" Danielle didn't even smile.
"It's just safer this way."
I let it go. One night, I had just taken out the trash and chucked some receipts into the bin by the sink. Danielle went to brush her teeth, knocked her toothbrush into the bin, and froze.
"Do you think it's still okay to use?"
"I mean, it touched paper trash for like half a second. Just rinse it." But she didn't. She called her mom. 10 minutes later, she was on speaker with her dad, describing the trash, how long the toothbrush was inside, whether the bristles had touched the side. I slipped on headphones. That night, I dreamt I was brushing my teeth. Not just a dream. It felt vivid. I could taste the mint, the scrape of bristles on my gums. I woke up sweaty. The next night, same dream. Brushing over and over until my gums ached. By the third night, I was unnerved. I watched Danielle carefully lock the door in her ritual.
"Good night, Maddie,"
she whispered. "Night." I closed my eyes. In the dream, I was brushing again, faster, harder, my gums bleeding, blood swirling in the sink. I jolted awake, panting. On the fourth morning, groggy and uneasy, I rubbed my eyes and saw Danielle standing at the sink. But something was wrong. She was brushing her teeth with my toothbrush.
What the hell?
I shouted, lunging out of bed. She jumped, toothbrush halfway out of her mouth.
Mom said it's fine. She said if I dropped mine, I could use yours for a few days.
I doubled over and gagged. My toothbrush had been in her mouth. I ran to the sink, spitting, rinsing, scrubbing my tongue with soap like an idiot. Danielle watched, calm.
You're overreacting.
I knew then I had to get out. But revenge first. I waited till she was in class, and then gathered my dirtiest underwear and slid them under her pillow. I imagined her pale face when she found them. But as I lifted her pillow, I saw something that made me stop. Tucked beneath, a small notebook, filled with my name. Page after page, in neat looping handwriting. Maddie talks too loud. Maddie leaves crumbs on the floor. Maddie wore the green shirt again. Maddie is ungrateful. Maddie rolls her eyes at me. A chill crawled down my spine. I put the pillow back. I shoved my underwear back into my hamper. I sat on the bed, heart hammering. Was she documenting me? That night, as she did her ritual, I pretended to scroll on my phone. Hey, Danielle, why do you always write in that notebook under your pillow? She froze. What? You know, the one with my name. Her face turned pale. You went through my stuff? No, I saw it, Daniel. What's in there? She bit her lip.
Mom says I should track when people make me uncomfortable.
I laughed, sharp and nervous. So, you have a file on me? You gonna report me to the dean? Maybe. Her eyes gleamed. Maybe I already did. I felt sick. That night, the dreams came back. Only now, I was brushing her teeth. I could feel her teeth, her gums, her breath. I woke up disgusted. The next morning, I went to the housing office. I need a room change. The admin, a bored-looking guy with a headset, raised a brow. Problems with your roommate? Yeah, she's unsettling. He smirked. You wouldn't be the first. What? He leaned forward. Word of advice? Watch your toothbrush. It might have visited places you could never even think of. I switched rooms that week. This story is inspired from one of the real-world events shared by our subscribers. In the real-life story, when the roomie dropped her toothbrush in the trash, she did go on a long call with her parents. After 2 hours of intense discussion, it was decided that she would be getting a new toothbrush. I still don't know how we didn't smell it sooner. You'd think a raw chicken rotting in a closet for weeks would raise alarm bells, but we'd gotten so used to the stench of old beer, gym socks, and unwashed dishes in our shared college apartment that the scent just blended in. Until it didn't. It was the end of October, midterms just behind us, and Kyle and I were half dead from all-nighters and caffeine overdoses. I came home one afternoon, threw off my hoodie, and immediately gagged.
Jesus, did something die in here?
I muttered, covering my nose. Kyle popped his head out of his room.
Oh shit, I think it might be the chicken.
What chicken? He blinked like he was trying to remember a dream.
It's from like a month ago. I bought raw chicken and seltzer. I never found the chicken after I got home. I think I left the whole bag in the closet.
You left raw chicken in our coat closet?
I was hungover. Sue me.
We opened the closet and nearly passed out. The grocery bag had melted into the carpet. The chicken had liquefied, seeping into the fibers like some kind of cursed soup. I dry-heaved in the sink while Kyle tried to scoop it into a trash bag. We cleaned it, bleached it, scrubbed it with every chemical we had, but something lingered. That night, I had a dream about my skin peeling off in strips. When I woke up, there was blood on my pillow from where my gums had bled during the night. 2 days later, Kyle showed me a patch on his forearm where the skin looked molted and thin. He joked about becoming a zombie. I laughed until I noticed a similar patch forming under my jawline. It got worse. Our teeth began to loosen. The skin on our hands peeled like sunburnt plastic. But here's the thing. Every time we left the apartment, we felt fine. No pain, no peeling. We'd sit in class or grab coffee and be completely normal. But the minute we stepped back into that place, it started again. What if it's not just the chicken? I asked Kyle one night, sitting on the kitchen counter with a cold beer pressed to my cheek. Like what? Mold? Asbestos? Something else. He looked at me, eyes bloodshot and sunken. It feels like the apartment's trying to kill us. We crashed at our friend Dave's place for a few nights. Within 24 hours, our symptoms eased. Skin started healing, no more bleeding gums. But we'd already crossed some threshold. Our bodies were damaged. We could feel it in our bones. The way joints creaked. The way light made our eyes burn. We had someone come and do a deep clean of the apartment. Industrial grade stuff. When we returned, the place smelled sterile and fake, like a hospital. We stood in the doorway for a full minute before stepping in. Nothing happened. Not right away. But around midnight, I woke up to find something pulsing in the closet. No joke, a faint glow under the door, like a heartbeat. I woke Kyle up. Tell me you see that.
I see it.
We didn't open it. We packed our bags and left again. That's when we decided to go back to the store where Kyle bought the chicken. It was this small, dusty place on the edge of campus. I'd only been in once. Mostly sold expired snacks and weird off-brand soda. We didn't expect it to still be open, but it was. Fully lit. Clean. New paint job. The guy behind the counter looked up and smiled. He was short, maybe 60, with gray hair slicked back and a Yankees cap that didn't fit quite right.
Well, 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 he said, grinning. Look who it is.
You remember us? Kyle asked.
Sure do. You were the kid who looked like my dumbass son. That's why I gave you the chicken. Figured you'd appreciate the lesson.
What lesson?
You gave me expired meat?
The man chuckled.
It wasn't expired, just seasoned.
I stepped forward. You knew what that meat would do? He shrugged.
I knew it would change you. Didn't think you'd be dumb enough to keep it in a damn closet. We're calling the cops, I said. You poisoned us.
His laughter echoed through the empty store.
Call whoever you want. No one's gonna find anything. It's not a crime to sell a chicken.
We stood there, stunned. My palms were sweating. I realized they were bleeding again. The scabs had cracked open.
Why would you do that?
Kyle asked, voice trembling. The man leaned over the counter.
You two are the first ones to come back. You think that means something?
We backed out of the store and drove in silence. For the next few weeks, we bounced from place to place, trying to stay away from the apartment. But things got bad. Kyle was worse. He started talking in his sleep. Not in English. Not even in any language I recognized. Just weird sounds. Like something was trying to speak through him. One night, I found him standing in front of the closet again. The pulsing light was back. Kyle, I said gently, let's go. He didn't move.
It's calling me,
he whispered. It's not real, he turned to me. His eyes didn't blink.
It's more real than you.
I grabbed my bag and left. He stayed. I haven't seen him since. This story is loosely inspired from a real-world event shared by one of our subscribers. In the real world, the following is what happened.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Back in college, my roommate once did something unbelievably careless. He picked up some groceries, sparkling water and raw chicken, and for reasons I'll never understand, shoved the entire bag into the closet we both used. And then he completely forgot about it. Weeks went by. A weird, stomach-turning stench began creeping into our room. We searched everywhere, trash, laundry, even under the bed. Until one day we opened the closet and found the source. The chicken had decomposed in the bag. The memory of that rancid odor still clings to me, years later.
I've never been one of those people who believed in energy or vibes. I went to yoga to stretch, breathe, and feel a little less like my spine was being wrung out by corporate America. That Saturday morning class at Soul Flow Studio was supposed to be like every other. Sweat, quiet, and detachment. But then there was her. She walked in like any other student. Slim, blonde, maybe early 20s, with a lavender mat and a water bottle covered in stickers, crystals and a mushroom, and an I voted badge. We smiled at each other at the entryway. Nothing remarkable. I placed my mat near the back, like always. She unrolled hers smack in the center. We started with a slow vinyasa. Everything was fine, but 20 minutes in, during downward dog, I heard a whisper. I thought someone's phone was on, but the voice grew louder, shaky, like static turning into a sermon. "The universe, she awake," the girl murmured. Everyone held their poses a beat longer. I glanced up. Her eyes were closed, lips trembling. "Everything is so fucking beautiful," she said louder, then let out this strange, blissed-out laugh. The teacher, Lyanna, didn't flinch. She glided into the next pose like it was part of the plan, but the rest of us were frozen. Then, the girl screamed, and I mean screamed, like some holy revelation had cracked open her skull and poured light into the room. "We're all connected. There is no death. There is only now." No one moved. I looked around. A guy near the window mouthed, "What the fuck?" Another woman clutched her mat like a shield. She kept going, talking to the ceiling, the floor, the walls, words pouring out like she wasn't even in control anymore. "The birds know. They know. And the trees are listening. We're not supposed to eat meat. Not after what they told me. Not after last night." 7 minutes. That's how long she went on for. No one dared to intervene. Not even Lyanna, who just closed her eyes and started a sun salutation like nothing was happening. And then suddenly, she collapsed into child's pose. Silence. Breath. Stillness. She didn't move again until the very end, when she rolled up her mat like nothing happened and walked out without a word. Everyone exchanged glances. No one spoke. I decided to look her up. Soul Flow had a class sign-in sheet, old school pen and paper. Before I left that day, I snapped a photo. There it was, Eva Marlin. Her Instagram was easy to find. Typical stuff at first. Yoga poses, travel pics, plant-based smoothies. And then it got weird. A story highlighted titled "Revelations" showed grainy video from the woods at night. In one clip, she was crying, saying something about the owls knowing the truth. In another, she was in a circle of people in weird costume, chanting. One slide simply read, 5/23, the veil will lift. I googled that date. That was 2 days ago. I don't know what made me keep going. Maybe it was boredom. Maybe it was how her eyes looked that morning. Like she was high on something only she could see. I clicked through her tagged photos and one stood out. A group shot at a farm retreat, smiling around a bonfire. Caption, "Thank you at Sacred Cycle Collective for the most awakening weekend of my life." I tapped the tag. The account was gone. I reverse image search the photo. One hit. A local news article from 3 years ago. Cult leader arrested in upstate New York following mushroom-fueled harvest ceremony incident. Same bonfire, same costumes. Eva was in the background, younger, hair shorter, but it was her. The article said the leader, Daniel Rook, had been arrested for unlawful imprisonment and distribution. The charges were dropped, the group disbanded. Or so they thought. I emailed the reporter from the article. I didn't expect a reply, but the next day, I got one. Subject line: do not trust her. It was one sentence. You should talk to Eva's mother. If she'll talk to you. Attached was a police report. It was most likely redacted, but I made out the name Eva Marlin and the words missing, suspected overdose, located by hikers. That was 8 months ago. I called the number listed for her mother. No answer. I left a message. Hi, I met your daughter Eva in a yoga class. Something strange happened and, well, I found an old article and I just want to make sure she's okay. She called back immediately. Her voice was raw. Eva died, she said. I froze. What? She died 6 months ago. An accidental overdose. We buried her in April. I didn't know what to say. But, I mean, she was in my yoga class 2 days ago, I whispered. There was a long silence, and then her mother laughed. A bitter, broken laugh. You're not the first person to say that. I didn't go back to Soul Flow the next week, but the week after, I did. I had to see if she would come again. And she did. Same spot, center of the room. Same lavender mat. She didn't say a word to me this time. No eye contact. No smile. Halfway through class, she did it again. Whispering about stars, connections, and light. But this time it wasn't random. She said my name. Danny, I forgave you. I buried you in the ash like you asked. I froze. Danny. Daniel Rook. After class, I followed her. I told myself I would just talk to her, ask if she was okay, but she walked fast, cutting through side streets until she reached an apartment building near Koreatown. I stayed across the street and watched. 10 minutes later, a man came out, mid-30s, tall, buzz cut. I recognized him from the cult photo. Daniel Rook. He wasn't in jail. I went home, my mind racing. I called the reporter again, and this time, he picked up. I saw Rook, I told him. He's with Eva. She's not dead. She's alive and in L.A. He was quiet. Then he said, they faked her death. What? She was part of the POD. They staged an OD, buried a closed casket, moved her out west, supposed to start over with a new identity. But she's not hiding. She's at a public yoga class. Yeah, he said grimly. I think she wants to be found. A week later, Eva's story broke online. A viral tweet thread by some true crime blogger. The yoga girl who died and came back. Photos, videos, the whole nine yards. Soul Flow shut down the next day. The cops raided the Koreatown apartment. They found Eva and Rook, but not just them. There were three others. Two women, one man. All registered missing in all other states. All thought to be dead. Inside the apartment, they found MacBooks and mushrooms. A notebook. And Eva's handwriting. We're building something exciting. New age startup. Better than AI. The next class begins when the world is ready to wake up. This story has been inspired from the mail which one of our Broccoli Fam subscribers sent to us. This is what he wrote. Roughly a month ago, I was at this local yoga studio for a midday class. There was a young woman positioned near the center of the room. Seemed totally normal at first, but halfway through the session, things took a strange turn. She started mumbling softly at first, barely audible over the calming playlist. Within a couple minutes, the murmuring turned into loud, disjointed exclamations. She kept going on and on about the cosmos and how everything to light would be purified. It was hard to make out the exact words, but it was intense.
While I was in college, I got a job at a 24-hour fast food joint called the Grill Shack. The place was fairly popular with kids, and it could get pretty busy at weekends, but it wasn't such a bad place to work. I was always placed on the front as a waitress, instead of in the back where the kitchens were, so I didn't have to deal with the grimy, overheated grills. I'd been there for almost 3 months when I got asked to do my first night shift. I would have turned it down since I had classes the next day, but they offered me double pay, and I was desperate for money, so I ended up accepting. Stupidly, I never thought to ask why the pay would be double just for working the night shift. I figured it was just because of the late hours. But given that it didn't seem like the kind of place that would be busy overnight, double did seem a bit excessive. I turned up just before 11 p.m. for my shift, and was surprised to find the place empty, since I was used to seeing it so packed during the day. I was on shift with another coworker, Hannah, who I had only met a couple times before and didn't know too well. She was in the kitchens at the back when I went through to put my stuff away. "Hey," I said, trying to strike up a conversation. She shot me a brief nod before going back to grilling burgers, so I shrugged it off and went to the staff room. After tying my hair back and putting on my apron, I headed out the front to keep watch over the restaurant. About an hour later, Hannah came out of the kitchens, her jacket slung over her elbow. "I'm off." I stared at her. "What, already?" She looked at me oddly. "Yeah, I've grilled enough patties to keep you going. You just gotta warm them up when someone comes in. Maybe add a couple extra toppings." "I'm here on my own?" I asked, my voice tentative. Hannah nodded slowly. "I thought you were told all this." I shook my head. "Nobody told me anything. Just to get here at 11 p.m. Hannah bit her lip, a strange expression on her face that I couldn't quite discern. "You'll be fine," she finally said, looking away from me. "Just make sure you stay out front. And if you hear anything at the drive-thru, ignore it." Before I could ask what she meant, she strode through the front doors, leaving them swinging shut in her wake. I stared after her, an unsettling feeling in my gut. What did she mean if I heard anything at the drive-thru? It was always closed after 10 p.m, so I hadn't expected any customers there anyway. I shrugged off her warning, reminding myself I was getting paid double. Admittedly, I hadn't expected to be left here on my own the whole night, but I would get through it. It didn't seem like the place would get that busy anyway. The clock ticked noiselessly on the wall as the night wore on. At just past 1:30, a couple of truckers came in, so I heated up the burgers that Hannah had prepared and kept an eye on them through the window. It was tough doing everything myself, but the guys were patient and polite enough, so I didn't mind. I waved them off a short while later and settled back into the eerie stillness of the restaurant at 2 a.m. Outside, it was pitch dark. I could barely see anything through the windows, and I could hear nothing but the wind scratching through the trees. I almost jumped when my phone buzzed from my apron pocket, and I pulled it out. A message from an unknown number. "Mark's coming in to help at 4 a.m. Until then, remember what I said. Hannah." I wasn't sure how Hannah had managed to get my number, but I was grateful for the reassurance. Only 2 more hours and I wouldn't be on my own anymore. Still, I found it weird that she had to remind me of her words. "If you hear anything at the drive-thru, ignore it." What exactly had she meant by that? I decided not to think too much about it and went to the storeroom to grab a mop. I figured I might as well make myself useful, and it would make the time go quicker until the next customer arrived. I was in the midst of mopping up grime and grease from the linoleum at the front of the restaurant when the air suddenly went very cold, almost like the doors were open, letting in the night chill. But when I checked, they were closed. I shivered, wearing only a short-sleeved shirt under my apron, goosebumps appearing along my arms and neck. Had the heating shut off or something? Frowning, I leaned the mop against the wall and headed back towards the kitchen. I was about to check the thermostat when I heard it. The soft crackle of static coming from the drive-thru speakers. My heart instantly dropped to my stomach as Hannah's warning echoed through my head. If you hear anything at the drive-thru, was there a fault with the speakers or something? I shook my head. Just ignore it, like Hannah said. Just ignore it. The static grew louder, filling the restaurant's kitchen, and I turned around to look at the drive-thru windows on the other side of the room. It was too dark to properly see anything out there. But just for a second, I thought I glimpsed a shadow standing by the window. When I looked again, it was gone, and I told myself I had simply imagined it. All at once, the static stopped, and the kitchen went quiet again. I breathed a sigh of relief. Just a malfunction after all. The second the thought crossed my mind, the speakers crackled again, and a voice came through. It was nothing but a whisper, barely audible over the grainy, muffled audio, but it sounded male. I froze, my heart pounding in my chest as I stared at the windows again. Was something out there?
Is anyone there?
The voice whispered, speaking in soft, strangled bursts.
Is anyone there?
I stood frozen in place, hardly knowing what to do. Hannah had told me to ignore it, but was this what she meant? Maybe it was just someone messing around, playing a prank. But something about the voice, the way it was speaking, gave me the chills. My breath quickened as I stood there, the eerie voice repeating its haunting question, each word more desperate than the last. My trembling hands clenched the edge of the counter, and I strained to see through the inky blackness outside. The drive-thru windows remained empty, devoid of any signs of life. Ignoring the voice was becoming increasingly difficult. My phone vibrated in my pocket, startling me once again. Another message from Hannah. Don't listen to it. Don't answer. It's not real. I bit my lip, torn between fear and curiosity. If it wasn't real, why was my heart racing so violently? Why did my skin crawl as if a thousand unseen eyes were fixed upon me? The voice outside grew more desperate, its whisper clawing at my sanity.
Please, I need help. Please, is anyone there?
It sounded like the voice of a man in agony, like a trapped soul pleading for salvation. As much as I wanted to heed Hannah's warning and maintain my silence, I couldn't resist the overwhelming dread pulling me toward the speaker. With trembling fingers, I reached for the intercom button, ready to shatter the silence. But then, a vision flashed before my eyes. It was Hannah's face, twisted in terror, her lips forming silent words. An indescribable horror overtook her features, and her eyes were wide with panic. That image was enough to stay my hand, to remind me that something was deeply wrong about all of this. The voice outside became frantic, its words devolving into incoherent pleas, as if it sensed my hesitation.
Please, 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 help me!
I backed away from the intercom, feeling the icy grip of fear tighten around my chest. The voice continued to call out into the void, its words more desperate, more unsettling. It grew louder, more insistent, as if it could feel my resistance. Just as I was about to surrender to the temptation, the restaurant's front door swung open, and a burst of frigid air rushed in. Mark, as Hannah had mentioned in her message, had arrived early. He looked at me with wide, terrified eyes. Then, at the drive-thru speaker, listen. he whispered. Don't ever answer it. It's not what it seems. I nodded, grateful for the reinforcement, but the unsettling presence outside lingered, the voice growing angrier and more deranged. The night had become a canvas of horror.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And I knew that whatever was out there was far from human.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.